The orthopedics industry has been around for a century, developing devices and implants that help people walk, run, and live healthier lives. But despite being one of MedTech's oldest sectors, it's also one of the fastest adopters of new technologies. Space-age materials, surgical robotic systems, sensors that can send data directly to hospitals and physicians. In this series, we'll talk with industry leaders about how these new technologies will change the face of MedTech. Welcome to the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. Hi, everyone. This is Tom Salemi of Device Talks. Welcome back to our Ortho Innovation Talks podcast, highlighting our friends at Zimmer Biomet. In our first episode, we talked about Zimmer Biomet's strategy. Today, we're going to talk about its innovation. I had the chance to interview Dr. Nitin Goyal, who is the Chief Science, Technology, and Innovation Officer at Zimmer Biomet. And he is an orthopedic surgeon who he says kind of accidentally found his way into industry. He was drawn to the startup world by the realization that patients weren't really being monitored closely or tended to or really tracked after they were discharged from hip and or knee implant surgery. And he developed a digital tool that could help that happen. That would be acquired. He'd go on to work at Optum. He'd go on to start another company. Now he's with Zimmer Biomet, and he's leading up their innovation charge. So we'll talk about his history. We'll talk about his views on orthopedics, on technology, and on where the sector is going. So as I mentioned on the podcast, he was a speaker at Device Talks Boston last year, and I was really glad that we had a chance to catch up on this podcast. So enjoy my conversation with Dr. Nitin Goyal. Again, he's Chief Science, Technology, and Innovation Officer at Zimmer Biomet. But before we begin that conversation, I want to bring in our sponsor, Millstone Medical. Well, I'm here with CEO Carl Neuberger. Carl, tell us a bit about Millstone Medical.
Thank you. Well, Millstone's been in business for 24 years. We're headquartered in Fall River, Massachusetts, where we have a packaging operation. We've got 20,000 square feet of clean room space, focusing on sterile packaging, obviously. We've got a logistics center down in the Memphis area. We're actually in Olive Branch, Mississippi. We perform all sorts of logistical services. We do regular pick, pack, and ship, but it's only with FDA-regulated product. We have a loaner kit operation. We handle a lot of bone and tissue, both ambient and frozen bone and tissue. And then a year and a half ago, we purchased two testing companies to expand our platform. We have a company located in Rhode Island down by the airport and another company over in Connecticut. And the Connecticut location is actually being moved to a much larger location. Today, we're in 5,000 square feet. In Willington, Connecticut, we're moving to 25,000 square feet down to Bloomfield. That's the opportunity that we see in that area that's in front of us.
And are you serving a U.S. market, a global market? Where are your customers from?
We mainly service a U.S.-based market, but out of our logistics center, we ship all over the world. Mm-hmm. For the testing operation, it's a little more regional, definitely U.S.-based, and testing tends to be a little bit regional. Our packaging operation, we mainly work with U.S.-based OEMs, but as I said, the logistics center ships all over the world.
All right, we'll hear more from Millstone Medical a little later in the podcast. If you'd like to find out more information now, go to its website, Millstone, M-I-L-L, Stone, Medical, all one word, .com. Well, Nitin Goyal, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Tom. We really appreciate it.
Excited to have this conversation. As I was saying before, I pushed record. You were at Device Talks Boston last year, and I'm excited to have you there. I couldn't wait to see your presentation, and things got so busy and so crazy, I never even got to say hello. So now we're doing it digitally, so I'm glad we finally connected.
Yeah, better late than never.
Yeah, right? No kidding. Yeah. So we always love to learn a bit about our guests, most specifically how they found their way into the medical device industry. You're a physician primarily. I imagine that was your first move toward medical technology, or how did you find your way into this field?
I would say that I feel probably similar to many docs who've transitioned to medtech, which is it was like accidental, honestly. It was a very, very non-planned path to get here. I'll give you my quick background so you can get a sense of maybe who I am and where I'm from, and the listeners can too. So I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I trained in Philadelphia. I was in Philadelphia for about 10 years, went to medical school, residency, and fellowship there, and came back to practice in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, Northern Virginia. I joined a large kind of what's called adult reconstruction, so hip and knee replacement private practice that has adult reconstruction fellows. So we train, we do a fair bit of research. And my path to med device was really because of research. I started doing some clinical research. This is back in 2011, I started practice. In 2013, I did an interesting study that's probably timely for now, but back then it was really new, which was this concept of outpatient joint replacement. And I got started thinking about outpatient joint replacement. Not many people were doing it then. And I started, I designed a study to look at that. It was a prospective randomized study looking at outpatient versus inpatient joint replacement. And without getting into the results of the study, I got started thinking about the fact that the majority of the recovery was happening at home. So patients were, they were in the hospital for anywhere from 4 to 36, 48 hours. And then it was a quick handshake, see you in a month, call me if there's a problem. And I felt like there was something wrong with that, right? I mean, it's like in the hospital, like every minute was monitored. And then it was like, oh, I'll see you in a month. Like there was something weird about that for me. And as I, you know, kind of considered it, I ended up starting a technology company back in 2015, connecting patients and providers through a care experience, very similar to some of the digital health technologies that exist today. This was pretty early. My company was acquired by United Health Group in 2018. And, wow. And that was like my foray into digital and how I started building product, honestly. Yeah.
So when you say outpatients, were you looking at ASCs or?
ASCs and outpatient at the hospital. Just trying to understand what the patient experience was like. You know, do patients like it more? Do they like it more? You know, are there more complications? Is it more work for the physician's office? Does it result in a better outcome? We were trying to evaluate all that stuff. But I guess the side effect of doing that study was it really got me thinking about it from the patient side of, yeah. there's a lot of fear and anxiety with all this stuff. And there was a disconnect between the patient and the provider. And then I felt like there was a technology opportunity there. That was my reason to really, I started building a product, not realizing I was starting a company. And then there's a little bit of a snowball effect that happens and gets a little scary many times. You know, at one point, you know, you're deep in and way over your head and learning a lot. But I realized I had a passion for building product.
That's amazing.
I didn't know that about myself. And I realized how much I liked it. And that's why, so after I joined United Health Group and Optum, was working, leading on the virtual care and ongoing care delivery, I left at the beginning of the pandemic to start a company to build it's an intelligent surgical tool. And Zimmer Biomet acquired that in 2021 pretty early. And, you know, Yvonne Tornos, who I think you know well and have interviewed before, came to me and said in his typical way, you keep doing this on the outside. Why don't you come do it with us, for us, you know, together? If you know Yvonne, he's probably one of the most convincing, persuasive people on the planet, and got me excited about the opportunities Zimmer Biomet and the opportunity to have a broader impact, I would say. Yeah.
Quite a turnaround. And I just want to go back for a moment to that moment where you identified the thing that concerned you about the patients being basically told, get back to us in a month, and sort of being out of touch. And you've identified the problem, but what led you to build a solution? Were you sort of a digital native app kind of person where you said, oh, I can whip this up together quickly? But what like drives someone to say, yeah, that's too bad that's happening to, let me see if I can fix it?
I've heard this term phrased innovation by irritation. I would say it was that. And frankly, I had a couple bad complications that I felt were preventable, meaning if we had engaged more, if we had connected daily, and it was almost like we were asking our patients to figure out a lot of stuff on their own. And I just wanted to make it better. I had no background in building technology, and I kind of just went head first. And I think maybe sometimes that's probably good, because I think if I had a background, I might have veered away from, oh, it's not that easy, it's hard, you know, there's all these hurdles, and I probably would have stopped in my tracks. I didn't know what I didn't know, and I just jumped right head first in. So,
when United came to buy your company, did that kind of blow your mind? I mean, that's enormous validation of something you created just to improve patient lives.
I think like probably any entrepreneur would say, like, it gives you this validation that you went down a path that's meaningful, not just for you or a few practices or a few hospitals, but something that was scalable. And that was just, boy, like that journey is just so awesome. You know, you can't, you know, it's just a fun thing. And honestly, like I learned more in those several years and then the years after when I started again prior to ZB than I think I could have ever learned. And then once you're in a big beast like United, I don't know how much you know about United, but it's 340 plus thousand employees. It's a large country. I mean, it's a lot, you know. It's a big bureaucracy, but you learn how to navigate it. And I would tell you that Yvonne asked me, have you worked in a big company? And I said, yeah.
Have you heard of?
Yeah. And so it was kind of interesting, you know, moving to ZB, I was prepared for it to be more bureaucratic than it is. And actually, it's been quite nice to live in the world that we live in at Zimmer Biomet, which is I feel like I can get stuff done, you know, especially with, I keep mentioning Yvonne, but our alignment to just drive the business forward in a meaningful way. It's just been a positive feeling. And I know that we can move the business forward in a meaningful way. There's no doubt in my mind.
And what led you to start that second company? Was that more innovation through irritation or was that something else?
That was probably, I knew that there was a big opportunity to just solve a meaningful customer problem. You know, this kind of comes back to like customer-centric innovation, right? Customer-centric solutions. And I think being a customer, you know, I always say that I'm not a medical device executive. I'm a customer, right? And even if our customer is the payer for a certain thing or a hospital, I really put myself in those shoes. And I would tell you, I think that's probably for me, that's what I like to do. I think it's my superpower. I enjoy doing that. And so for my second company, it was obvious to me. I mean, I'm a joint replacement surgeon. There was a huge opportunity to develop the surgical tool in arthroplasty that I felt like could change the paradigm. And we rolled out our version of that tool about 8 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. It's just hitting the market and really excited about that. And it's been a great journey to build that and work with Zimmer Biomet to finish it up and bring it to market.
All right, we'll take a quick break from my conversation with Nitin Goel to bring back our sponsor, Millstone Medical. Once again, I was speaking with Carl Neuberger, the CEO of Millstone Medical. So let's talk about the orthopedic space. It's a complex market, lots of pressures, supply chain. What's it like? How does Millstone help customers solve these challenges in the orthopedic space?
The OEMs today are looking to control their costs, to control their investments, and the work is getting more and more complicated, and that's what Millstone's really good at. We are a very cost-effective alternative to provide solutions to both large OEMs and mid-tier OEMs, and we have a very large engineering department. So we've actually, over the last 5 or 6 years, become extremely good at handling complex work that goes into a clean room for the packaging portion of our business. It's what sets us apart from other alternatives. And the large OEMs can do all their packaging in-house, for example, but the reality is our engineering department is highly skilled, very nimble, and from a production standpoint, we match that. We're very nimble and we can make changes to make sure that the right setup is needed for complex work. The logistics center is an incredible opportunity for second-tier OEMs, mid-size OEMs. All of the expense of growing falls onto Millstone rather than the OEM itself. And the testing work, very, very focused on customer service and short lead times. It's a competitive advantage we have in the marketplace.
And do you work with implants throughout orthopedics, or do you have a particular focus on large joint or hip or extremities?
We do a lot of spine and trauma work. That's historically where Millstone has been the area we've been playing. But we're expanding that platform. We're growing our business. We're getting into new areas. We do a small amount of work with pharma companies. We see that as an opportunity for growth in the future.
How does pharma and orthopedics would seem to be different sides of a, maybe even different coins. How does that become a place you can kind of move into or shift into?
Well, in the packaging world, you're still in a clean room, different requirements, but we meet all the requirements. In the logistics world, down at our Olive Branch facility, we actually have all of our bone and tissue licenses. We have our pharma licenses. So it's an FDA-regulated product is our area of specialty, and we think that's a growth area where we can add value and help support customers in that area.
And final question, just again, looking at the orthopedic space, this is an area that we're seeing a lot of innovation, a lot of introduction of electronics, a lot of different materials, obviously use of robotics. How do you see this space changing in the future, and how does Millstone change along with it? I'm guessing those acquisitions are going to help you do that.
Those acquisitions were an expansion of our platform, and it was an extension of our work in Fall River. The work that's going through validation in our packaging operation all has to go through testing. And so this was just another way that we could expand our service offering to both existing customers as well as expand our customer base. From where I sit, it seems like the work is getting more and more complicated, and that plays to Millstone's strengths in this industry. We're going to continue to invest in our engineering department. We're going to continue to be nimble. We have always stayed ahead of our customers' needs as far as capacity, both physical capacity and labor capacity. And we're going to continue with that strategy so that as our customers grow and bring new products to market, we're going to have the engineers, we're going to have the clean room space, we're going to have the testing capacity so that we can fulfill their needs and help them get to market quicker, help them make an impact on patients' lives.
That's fantastic. Well, you've got a great story there at Millstone. Carl, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed being here, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
That concludes our sponsor message. Thanks again to Millstone Medical for stepping up and sponsoring this episode of Ortho Innovation Talks. If you'd like to find out more information about Millstone Medical, go to its website, millstonemedical.com. That's M-I-L-L, stonemedical.com. Have you been practicing this entire time?
It's an interesting question. So I started practice in 2011, like I mentioned. I changed my practice pattern when I started my first company because I realized I needed to kind of put more time into the company at some point. And then when I joined United, I dropped my time significantly. And now at Zimmer Biomet, I've continued to practice, but I see patients or operate about a half day a week. And that's just because that's the bandwidth to get stuff done. You know, I'm realizing more and more that I want to have an impact that's outsized. And I know that I can do that with my role at ZB. And it's just an opportunity to really make a meaningful impact on patients, providers, the physician, the payer, just at a broad level.
I would imagine, though, practicing even that amount of time would be a critical way of maintaining that customer point of view and that touchstone.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah. I mean, even the feeling of entering a physician's office, like I feel like I have that. You know, one of my previous companies, I remember walking into a product meeting early in my time, and they were building a product that was supposed to be deployed in a physician's office. I got really confused because I couldn't understand it, right? And I just didn't. So I asked the question. I asked just a basic question. Has anyone on this call spent 2 half days in a physician's office? And it was like pin drop silence.
Oh boy.
And this is one of those situations where I was like, this is what I'm talking about. You have to understand your customer. You have to spend time. You have to understand their needs, their pain points, their experiences. And you got to put that at the forefront of product development. And it's easy to say it, but they're it's the key stakeholder. So you got to engage with whether it be healthcare providers, patients, caregivers, you know, the CEOs, and you have to understand it and not discount it and make sure you get a broad view. I think sometimes you go to one stakeholder in one format and they can have a strong point of view, but you have to get, in the case of physicians, you need private practice, you need academic, you need, to some level, you do need to think about what if we just threw a bomb on this whole thing and just reinvented the whole way and you need leaders that are willing to think about it like that. Yeah.
Interesting. The past 10 years, let's talk about innovation in orthopedics. The past 10 years have been, I think, probably, we've seen more innovation these past 10 years than probably the previous 3 or 4 decades, I think, with the addition of Canary Medical sensors and with the arrival of robotics. Describe for me innovation in orthopedics. It has been, I think, a sleepy sector for a long time when it comes to bringing in new technologies other than materials. How has that changed over the past decade?
That's a great question. Before I just talk about orthopedics specifically, I would just say healthcare. A colleague with a very scientific mind once told me, change in healthcare doesn't go viral, it goes bacterial. I thought that was kind of funny.
You got a bunch of gems. Look at you.
But you know, for a scientifically inclined mind, for just for maximal clarity, that means for those who don't have a scientifically inclined mind, that means the healthcare change takes time, you know, and because of the probably for multitude of reasons, you know, complexity, regulatory environment, you know, all that stuff. And so it's an exciting time in orthopedics because technology is moving so fast and things that were probably out of reach before are becoming well within our reach, you know. And so metal and plastic parts will always be a core part of our offering, et cetera. But there's no doubt in my mind that this is changing quickly. I mean, I don't think if anyone would tell me that in 15 years, probably most things that we put in the body wouldn't have some sort of sensor on it. I mean, for God's sake, my toaster has a sensor. My toaster is connected. My fridge is connected. My alarm is connected. My thermostat's connected, right? Like, how could you feel? Now, listen, Tom, you and I know there's iterations of that, right? It's not like we're not there today. We're probably going to go through 5 or 6 iterations, but that's the exciting part about Zimmer Biomet. We're on the journey, right? And there's no doubt that we continue to have to keep the customer in mind. So prove that the value is the right value, you know, whether we're addressing outcome, so, you know, safety, decreasing complications, whether we're addressing value or experience, we have to make sure it's meaningful. There's no doubt. You can't just put a sensor and expect it to win. But I think there's no doubt in my mind that that's going to happen. When I think about the episode of care in orthopedics or in healthcare in general, most decisions that are made based on subjective data. You know, mm-hmm. a patient feels a certain way. The provider generally has this experience, right? When you think about, let's just focus on even arthroplasty, hip and knee replacement for a second. How do you know when the right time is to have the surgery? How much pain is too much pain? When have you waited too long? You know, or intraoperatively, what's the best position for the implant itself? What do you do intraoperatively that's going to affect postoperative outcome? I mean, there's so much objectification that we can do to make it truly a scientific approach to the way we treat problems. You know, the way I think about it is bringing the power of an institution like Mayo Clinic or HSS or Cleveland Clinic to Tuscaloosa, not to put Tuscaloosa in a bad place, but like taking that power of what's done at top institutions and enabling providers all over the world. So you take that to places in India or China or third world markets, you know, like it gives us an opportunity.
So how do you take a business that's like a Zimmer Biomet that's been a leader in orthopedics, but the large joint business and introduce these new technologies, the sensors and things like that? What has that process been like over the last 10 years? Talk about sort of the iterating that's going on with your product portfolio.
First of all, how do you do it? You do it a little bit with brute force. I mean, you have to, and it's got to come from the top. There has to be alignment that there's a willingness to change here and a vision of change, right? And that, hey, we can do this better. We owe it to our providers, payers, physicians, that we will drive this business forward in a meaningful way. So there has to be that alignment from the top. And then I think you have to have a frank conversation, probably with humility, of what your core capabilities are and where you need to leverage external capabilities. And that's a real thing, right? So, you know, when you think about wanting to develop strong movement from R&D, can you do it all internally? That's the big question, right? The organic R&D has its own advantages, you know, whether it be the control over the development process, the intellectual property, controlling all the strategic direction. But it's time consuming. It's resource intensive. It's really risky. I mean, honestly, if you don't have the core capability, you have to build it. I mean, in the case of sensors or big data, that's like probably the most wanted workforce today, meaning it's very difficult to hire at a high expense. So you got to invest in infrastructure and talent and ongoing research. So I would tell you that we feel very strongly that, yes, you should develop your core capability, but it starts with things like external partnerships, inorganic growth via acquisitions or partnerships, some in different formats, whether it be research institutions, universities, companies like Canary, like Microsoft, like Apple, all three of which we have partnerships with, right? And getting access to complementary technologies or resources. I mean, I think it mitigates the risks, allows us to leverage each other's shared, you know, capabilities. And it doesn't come without its own challenges, Tom. I'm not going to lie. I mean, there's whether you're talking about partnering with a larger company like Microsoft or Apple or Canary, I mean, there's challenges, right? You have to be willing to manage it. It takes some effective communication. You know, you got to get common goals aligned, right? And coordination. So But we've gone down that path, and I think we've gone down that path effectively, and with a goal to change the industry. You have to have that goal. Otherwise, you're going to abandon it early because there's going to be obstacles along the way. That's just the reality of it. Anything easy probably isn't worth doing, right?
Talk a moment about the partnership with Canary Medical. What is that? What has that allowed you to do? And curious, in your interest in connecting with your customers, with the surgeons, are you leading the surgeons in bringing sensor technology into the implants? Is it the other way around? Are you lockstep side by side? How has this been adopted by the market?
You know, obviously, we love the relationship with Canary. It's allowed us to be first to market, first to world in a knee sensor technology. And it's generated so much insight for us. You know, we're collecting billions of data points together on various parts of the patient's experience, right? Things that we never had any insight to before. The cool part of what we're doing with Canary is that we're on this journey, and this journey, Canary is a huge part of it. I mean, I would say a big part of it, right? But we've been on this journey of data, right? We started ZB Edge, which was this concept of connecting the entire ecosystem. So we have our connected health solution, My Mobility, which is really from the beginning, the time the patient sees the doctor to the time that they're maybe for a long time after they're still recovering from their procedure, right? We have all of our connected devices, including ROSA, and that data feeds into this ecosystem. And then Canary is a big part of it because we're tying in all the Canary data. So having the demographic data, the preoperative data, the intraoperative data, and the postoperative data that's objective plus the subjective parts of that, I mean, boy, we couldn't be more excited about the path there. You asked the question about, are we dragging?
Yeah, let me stop myself for a second. Yeah, let me stop because you're right. I did ask. I did try to sneak in an extra question. But as you're talking about Canary Medical, it kind of brought me back to your first point that you were basically sending patients off after surgery, not having any idea what happens next when they go home. Canary Medical, I assume, kind of closes that gap for you, kind of provides that information. You're not just sending them home to take care of themselves. You're able to still be involved with that. That must be really gratifying.
I mean, for surgeons, we're hearing, we know that we don't need to see this patient. So we give them a quick call and they're doing exceptional. So we don't waste their time. We're really creating efficiencies. And for us, that's a big part of where we want to focus: efficiency, value, decreasing the cost in the healthcare system, right? And so, boy, that's a big thing. You didn't need to see them at 4 weeks or 3 months. And the patient satisfaction is extremely high because they're not feeling disconnected from the doc because they didn't have a visit. They're actually feeling more connected than they've ever felt because they're getting their situation monitored. Otherwise, they were having to report it back. We've had physicians call patients saying, hey, like, we've seen a big decline in your functional status. What happened? Where they would never have had that insight before. And the patient said, you know, there was a situation that I can share that, you know, the patient had a big fall. So they hadn't called the doc. And so that patient was brought in for a visit because of the sensor that was getting the data, right? I mean, that's pretty cool. I mean, I think that's a unique situation. I mean, that's why when you say, you know, where are we going with all this metal and plastic and sensors and, you know, how is orthopedics changing? Boy, it's an exciting time in the field because I can't imagine going backwards from that.
And that kind of answers my second question was, are you leading the surgeons with this technology? Are they leading you or are you both walking lockstep? I feel like it might be the third that you both see the value in this kind of tech.
I mean, to be frank, it's like I think most technologies, you know, you have the tech enthusiasts, the early adopters, right? Sure. The ones that say like, hey, I want this. I don't even care about the value. I'm just excited about it, right? We certainly had that big group, right? And then it moves into the kind of the more conservative folks. And I'll tell you like, yeah, obviously like any technology, there's the inherent disbelievers. And so we started with our tech enthusiasts in our limited market release. And then we've transitioned gradually to the rest of the population of physicians because the value's there. There's no doubt.
What other areas are there for innovation? Like infection with implants, is that a big issue? And is that something the innovation can help solve?
Well, I'm gonna back out of infection specifically, but I'm gonna come to that in a second. But I think we're probably focused on three broad areas, right? So broad areas for us would be experience for all stakeholders. So physicians, patients, providers, payers, we want to improve the experience. We want to improve the outcome. And what that means to us would be maximizing the safety, reducing complications, optimizing the overall result, making things reproducible. And then finally, increasing the value, which to us means essentially reducing those inefficiencies and decreasing the cost. So when you mentioned the infection specifically, because that's an area of focus for us, because we feel that, I guess this, as a leader in healthcare, as a leader in med device, as a leader in arthroplasty, if we're not addressing some of the biggest problems in arthroplasty, then who is, right? Yeah, we, in a way, I would tell you, not in a way, it is our moral societal obligation to address these problems, not just our business obligation. It's our societal obligation, right? Tom, I mean, these things are hard to address. They're expensive. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience. You got to be willing to go over, you know, through all these obstacles. And we've prioritized infection as a major area of impact for us, where we feel like we need to be the player. We need, whether it be surface treated technologies, things that have complex regulatory paths, we need to be involved. And we need to be leading the charge more than involved. And we need to understand the problems and be able to come up with innovative solutions. I wouldn't say that it's distinct from things like sensors, because there's a lot of cross-reactivity. You know, when we think about sensors, can we diagnose infection better? Can we prevent infection with therapeutic type devices? And we're certainly exploring and spending time in many of those areas.
With the focus on an infection, is the innovation there? Is it the sensor technology? Is it collecting the data? Or is it more in the material side of things or the manufacturing? Or is it a little bit of everything? Where is the solution, do you think, there?
I think this is when my investor team probably pushes the, you know, don't say too much. But I would say yes, you know, yes, yes. And I smile pass. Because... Yeah, no, I smile. I smile, and I'm being facetious a little bit. We're just excited about it, and we believe we have a path on multiple parts there. And I think this comes back to, I keep mentioning it, but it comes back to wanting to spend time with the customer. And I feel, I'm saying I feel because this is a very subjective thing. I feel at Zimmer Biomet, that's what we're doing. If there's been one change in the last 5 years, it has been an extreme high focus on understanding true problems, understanding true pain points. And that's been driven by Yvonne, that's been driven by myself, it's been driven by many people. And we're doing it. It's not just talk. I mean, we're trying to understand so that we can deliver meaningful solutions. And we know infection is one of the areas that we have to play in.
Final question. You've been generous with your time, and this is probably going to get you in trouble with your investor team again, but what's next? Where do you see orthopedics and Zimmer Biomet going in the next 5 years or so? Are we going to see, as I said, we've seen a lot of change over the past 10 years. Is that change going to be accelerating? What's the world look like?
I think it's some of the stuff we've already talked about. Without using buzzwords, I think it is interesting how big data and AI will have an impact here. You know, I was recently at a providers conference on innovation in hip surgery. And a doc said, everyone expects us to be like airline pilots with zero failures, right? They expect that to be the case, right? But the pilot gets into a reliable 737 daily. We have all sorts of patients coming in, BMI 55, BMI 25, immunocompromised diabetic. Like, how can we have the same expectation, right? I thought that was an interesting way to think about it, right? Zero is not possible. So I agree with that, right? Zero is not possible, but we have to do everything that we can do with data and the technology that's available to drive us to as close to zero as we can. And we believe there's opportunity there. You know, providers struggle with technology and the expectations, and if it can and will help, they're rightly hesitant about that, because probably the biggest impact that technology has had on a provider's life has been EMRs. And what that's done has been destroy their sense of technology because of the pain associated with that. So I think we're going to have to continue proving to them that we can actually solve problems in a meaningful way. We have to be patient. It goes back to technology doesn't go viral in healthcare, it goes bacterial. Let's spend the time, let's do the hard work, and let's address meaningful problems. I mentioned AI. Last thing I want to leave with is I mentioned AI, and I mentioned it not to throw out a buzzword. I do think there's a lot to be said about objectification. You know, it's not a science, it's an art. Well, does it always have to be? Can we facilitate getting as close to data-driven as possible and then letting the physician weigh in? You know, there's so many decisions that are subjective today, and I think there's a huge opportunity there for us to spend some time and solve meaningful problems. So, hey, Tom, thank you very much for inviting me and listening to me drone on here. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, this is interesting, Seven. It is interesting to me that I think very often you'll see a chief innovation officer has an engineering background. I think it's interesting that you're coming at it from a provider perspective. And I imagine that just gives you a whole great deal of insights on where your company customers, but your colleagues want all this technology to go next. So it's an interesting position to be in.
Love it. Love it. No, I certainly rely on my engineering colleagues and stick to them closely when I have points of weakness.
Great, Nitin. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Appreciate you, Tom. Thank you.
All right, well, that is a wrap. Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Millstone Medical, and of course, our guest, Dr. Nitin Goyal. Please share this episode of the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast on your LinkedIn channel. It'd be great to have this story out there. And when you do, tag me, tag Device Talks, tag our managing editor, Kayleen Brown. We'd love to be part of that conversation. Of course, connect with us on LinkedIn as well. It'd also be great if you subscribe to our Device Talks podcast network so you don't miss any future episodes of our Device Talks podcast, including the Ortho Innovation Talks podcast. You can subscribe to the Device Talks podcast network on any major podcast player. Finally, if you're so inclined, please give a ranking to the Device Talks podcast network. It'd be great to have your help in showing others to our podcast. It's a great way to generate more listeners for the podcast. The more we get, the more episodes we can bring you. So we hope you can help us with that endeavor. All right, folks, that's a wrap. Thanks so much again for joining us on to this episode of Ortho Innovation Talks. We'll have another episode coming up for you a little later this spring. Take care, everybody.